The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Aaron.
Are you going to be like that?
Yeah, because I'm early.
I know. We were all early this morning. It's super confusing.
We're all sitting here on time and everything.
In deference to our guest, we thought we'd arrive early and actually be organized, call them on time, the whole thing. We got it. We did it.
It's very confusing.
I know. We did it.
I know.
Nobody's tuned in yet. They're all waiting. They think they've got time.
I was the first one in the chat room. There's a disadvantage to that.
I know. There's nobody to talk to. If you'd like to join us on the chat room, it's wethepeopleradio.us. Click the listen button and pop right up there. And for those of you that haven't been on the chat for a while, it's actually working fine now. So before you just don't do it because you don't need the frustration. No longer an issue. Somehow we've jumped the shark on that one.
And if you'd like to call in, the number is 530-605-4567.
Okay. So we did all the
important stuff.
Okay, so let's speed forward to our guest because I've just been really looking forward to this because solar just irritates me. I got an email a couple of weeks ago from a guy who said, "Hey, do you want to have somebody on about this rooftop solar thing and all the government grants that we're all paying for this." So why should we be paying for, anyway?
Yeah, we pay for it more than one way, too.
Not even going to go there, but it's always bothered me because, honestly, for such a great industry, why does it never become self-sufficient? Why is that? That's just, like, never in the plan.
Why have I paid for so many solar systems and I don't own one?
Exactly.
Easy for you to say.
Michi Eliazi earned his master's degree in political science at American University in Washington, D.C., has worked in communications and policy research for the last several years with multiple organizations, including Americans for Tax Reform and Americans for Prosperity. Done all sorts of stuff, research on taxes, healthcare, energy, voter trends, and media. We could have him on here all day, but we only have an hour, so going to zoom forward and ask our guest to join us and fire off with whatever he's thinking this morning.
Good morning, Michi.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing today?
Great. How
Fantastic.
Are you? Are you you on East Coast time?
Fine.
So you having lunch?
I am on East Coast time. No, I haven't eaten lunch yet. I've been actually just doing some reading, getting ready for the week. Even though Congress is on recess, there's still a lot of work for folks out in the private sector to do.
Exactly. It's time to catch up while they're out.
Funny how that works.
Out in their district visiting with people, it's time for you guys to get ahead of the policy that's coming down. So, is the solar thing? I know that David wrote the article that appears on our page, and actually, for people who'd like to read that, we're not going to obviously do that for you. But you can go to wethepeopleradio.us. Robert's got that all attached there on the page. I was fascinated by that because it's always bugged me that these guys tout, solar, we can get rid of all the fossil fuels, we can have solar and wind, and none of them pencil out, ever.
Yeah, absolutely. First off, thank you for posting the article on the webpage for your show. I actually took a look, and it's very comprehensive. It's great what you do for the guests that you have on to go into detail, about the work they do and what you're going to focus on. So, yeah, our president, Taxpayers Protection Alliance President David Williams, wrote an article regarding this company, Solar City, out there in California. And what's going on is, and you guys really hit the nail when you talked about how the drive for a successful solar energy awakening really just hasn't hit the mark, and taxpayers have essentially been subsidizing it. But what's worse about this is that what Solar City is doing is they're taking advantage of these tax credits where normally they would go to the consumer, but Solar City has found a way for them to hoard the tax credits for themselves. So instead of having the homeowners buy the solar panels to have them installed on their home, what they do is they have them lease them. So they say you can get them at a discounted rate and pay over time. But what's going on is they're not getting the tax credit for it, and the 30% tax credit is actually being claimed by SolarCity. So you have taxpayers nationwide essentially going to subsidize a company out in California who's really, you know, going around the idea where consumers would want to get the solar panels for, A, I'm going to get a tax credit, and B, oh, it might save me some cost in the beginning, but what's going on is they're only saving costs in the beginning because they're leasing the panels and they're not getting the tax credit that's going to SolarCity.
So normally, up to this point, up to prior to SolarCity's great deal, the consumer would actually purchase the solar panels and get the tax credit directly, and at the end of whatever financing they had arranged, they would own the panels. But on the lease program, do they own at any point? Do they ever end up owning the panels?
No, because what's going on is they're leasing it for this period of time, and it's actually interesting that you bring that up, because they lease it for so long that sometimes it actually hurts the homeowners when they try to sell their homes. Because what happens is they put their house on the market and they're into these long-term leasing plans. What happens is that possible buyers may not want to sign that lease arrangement. So homeowners are really stuck with the panels that they've leased, and it actually becomes difficult because the lease is so long for some that it actually hinders how they can put their home on the market if they want to.
And this isn't a situation like a satellite dish where they could go up and take it off and sell it to somebody else. Once that goes on your home, it's pretty much a custom deal, isn't it?
Correct. I mean, these are structures that are put in place, and they really are going to be with the home. It's not something like a satellite where they just basically put a clamp in on the side. I mean, I used to have DirecTV, and, you know, the satellite, they come in and they take it off. That doesn't happen here. And these leases are so long that the homeowners keep them on, but they're not owning the homes, and it perpetuates, the scheme, really. By SolarCity to essentially get these tax credits and take advantage. And it's really unfortunate because homeowners who may look at solar and may be energy efficient conscious, and you know, I just want to be clear about TPA's position here. It's not about solar in general. It's about what this company is doing, because we don't believe the taxpayers need in Alabama or in New York or in Michigan need to be subsidizing SolarCity. I mean, we've seen this kind of winners and losers choosing happen before, and you guys mentioned it again. I mean, I'll say it. You mentioned it before about this idea that where has the success been for the solar panel industry? Where has this awakening been for the solar energy movement? We just haven't seen it, and it's cost taxpayers billions of dollars over the last, you know, however long we've been doing this for, decades, really.
Sure, because the solar guys always say, well, you know, this is how we get it to the marketplace. You know, the government has to subsidize it so that the technology can get better and, you know, more cost efficient, and then it'll be self-supporting. That's just, I mean, as far as I can tell, it's never happening. We're just going to pay for it forever. And then, I mean, stuff like this, it's like one of those stupid cars, you know, Leafs? The Leaf. Who would name a car a Leaf? You know, so you have your, what was it, a $60,000, you know, tiny tin can called the Leaf that goes 40 miles or some fool thing. Is this the same kind of deal? Is this just a feel-good energy thing, or do they actually get a break on their electricity? I mean, how can you lease solar panels and then come out how does that come out in the wash?
Yeah, no. Actually, the savings that they're seeing really is just coming from the fact that they're leasing the panels. I mean, you can look at things. I mean, TPA has done great work on other energy issues like LEED certification. I mean, just to kind of bring up the idea that these ventures into energy efficiency really don't benefit who they're supposed to benefit. And something like LEED, you know, where you pull that in is, it's certifications and standards that are supposed to be met, and the idea is we're going to get energy efficiency. But once they do studies on what happens with some of these LEED certified buildings, you actually see buildings who aren't LEED certified in the same city or in the same county actually using less energy. And for solar, it's quite the same thing. We're not, the lack of savings just, it just keeps going. And whether it's the taxpayers who are paying for this, they're losing out on it. Whether it's the homeowners who are leasing this, they're actually losing out because they're not getting the tax credit that they thought they were going to get. And they're not seeing the savings that they thought they were going to get on their energy bill. So it's really a vicious cycle when we see the government essentially saying, well, we're going to go ahead and pick this industry because we want to put our money into it. And it's really not their money. It's your money. It's my money. It's taxpayers' money. And they're picking and choosing these winners and losers in the marketplace. And the problem with that is that the more that you do this, the tougher it is to get away. Because like you said, we've been doing this for a long time. Yeah. And here we are, decades later, we're still doing it.
Yeah,
it's still a problem.
I don't even know when we started with solar, but it seems like forever ago. And I just keep, you know, I keep looking at my watch. It's like, are we done paying for this yet? If this is such a great idea, why doesn't it ever stand up on its own 2 feet? Because I don't see it ever. I don't see it coming. We need to take a really quick break, and we'll be right back with our guest, Michi Iliazzi, Communications and Policy Manager for Taxpayers Protection Alliance. You guys are going to like the article. It's on WeThePeopleRadio.us. Be right back with you here at KCNR, 1460 AM.
Something like a stylish solar panel.
Thanks, Bob. You're rejoining We the People Radio with Michi Iliazzi, the policy manager for Taxpayers Protection Alliance. Oh, easy for me to say. Okay, it's not 11:15 here. It's only 8:15. Oh, my gosh. So this whole solar thing, are the companies based primarily in California? I mean, it seems like all the ripoffs, you know, Solyndra and all those guys are always out here.
Yeah, is Solar City the only company? I know there's Wall Street connections in that, and I'm sure you're going to get to that. But is Solar City the only company that's doing this?
It's the only company that we've been looking at that's doing it, and actually, it's not just us that have been looking at it. There's actually a great many pieces, and this really is going back to the last year. I mean, Solar City has really been under scrutiny for this, and it's interesting that you mentioned Wall Street, and I just want to kind of talk about the idea that are they based in California? Yes, they are, but what's going on is they're actually, the solar panels that they're getting, they're using a strategy where they buy most of their panels from a Chinese supplier. And really what's happening is, so taxpayers are subsidizing this company partly, and they're getting these tax credits, then they're buying these solar panels from overseas in China, and then what happens is the ITC, the Trade Commission, comes in and actually levies a tariff on these panels that are coming in from China that they're buying, which ends up raising the cost for the consumers that are having to lease them. So really, really bad.
Which I don't have a problem with that. I think if you're going to make it in China, they should pay a tariff so that we can compete over here. But the whole solar panel, you know, if you make a product that doesn't, I mean, they do work, but if it takes, you know, 50 years to pay for it before you actually see the savings, so you have to have the government come in and subsidize it so that it is feasible. Where does that, how did that ever start? Well, I know how it started.
There's no time limit. Yeah. It isn't like, okay, you got to get off the subsidy by, you know, X date or we're not doing it anymore. I mean, we've become emotionally attached to the solar thing.
Yeah, I think you... Yeah, sorry.
That's... what do you think? I mean, you analyze this stuff. I just hate on it.
Well, I mean, I was going to say, I think you hit it on the nose with the emotional aspect of it. And when you talk about something like renewable energy, energy efficiency, solar, wind, etc., you know, to give the benefit of the doubt and say that some individuals, many individuals who push these technologies, who work and try to, you know, make these technologies the new way to go for energy, to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that they have the interest of the consumer in mind, the interest of the taxpayer in mind, the interest of the environment in mind, that's okay to start. But when you see a pattern that goes on for years, for decades, where we see things like solar, like wind, like lead, and you find that in the end, you're not saving the money for the consumer, taxpayers are having to subsidize it, and government is really ending up getting a lot of this money too. This is where the problem lies, and this is why the argument becomes something where it's not in terms of whether it's working or not, it's actually becomes how much are we having to pay for it to even get it to look like it's working? And that's the problem. And, you know, so I think, like you said, it becomes where the timetable is something where, yeah, it starts off as something that's good and you want to try and see if this will work. And like you said, you become emotionally attached to that goal. But with all of the money that's being spent and all of the ways that consumers are having their costs, you know, increase, you have to be able to take the emotion out and say, something's not right here. This isn't working for consumers. Taxpayers shouldn't be footing the bill for this. And government really needs to get out of the business of picking and winning winners and losers when it comes to energy and what's working and what's not.
Now, on the lease program, is that a one-time payout for these companies that claim the subsidy? Or does it get paid... over time, how does that work?
So when they claim them, they're claiming them as a 30% tax credit, and essentially they can claim them. It would be a yearly claim because this is something that they're leasing. They own the panels, so they can claim that. They can claim that. Obviously, something like a solar panel is a depreciated asset. So it would be a claim where you may be getting a different value each time, but as long as they have the lease, the fact is the consumers aren't getting any of the tax credits that they thought they were getting. And as long as SolarCity keeps owning these panels, they're going to get tax credits. And that could be something, whether it's how many they own, how long they own them, you know, how many new they're getting. It's perpetuated. It's a perpetuated cycle. And the real problem here is now that SolarCity is taking advantage of it and it's been doing this for some time and it's had some attention, what are other solar panel companies going to start doing? Are they going to start looking at, well, how can we take advantage of this tax credit and really shift the cost to consumers and get that taxpayer money?
Yeah, they're
going to. That's going to be a big problem.
Sure, because they'll figure out that it's going to be a lot more advantageous for them to lease these panels direct to the consumer rather than sell them to them.
Well, how do people notice that they're not, I mean, is the energy savings so great that they don't care that they're not getting the tax credit?
Well, no, what happens is when they're marketed to the consumer, the leasing that they're offering, it shows such a upfront reduction in cost, so you can go to them and basically say, well, here's our competitor, and this is what it would cost, and here's what you're going to pay, and then when you get into the idea of how much energy savings you're going to get, they can, you know, be able to say, well, that's comparable, so what you're really doing is you're saving on the front end, so that way when your energy bills come, they are, you know, you've got all this money up front that you're getting because you're leasing it, and with the leasing it instead of owning it, you can pay less. So it's all these hidden costs. I want to touch on something that you guys just talked about when you said that other companies, and I brought this up and then you expanded upon it. This really gets to another big problem when we talk about other types of renewables and other types of taxpayer subsidies. The complication of our tax code and the fact that we allow this kind of runaround by companies to be able to essentially go around the consumer, take the tax credits for themselves, and be able to continually get those taxpayer subsidies while essentially gaining the market. And that's a big problem with our tax code. It's a larger problem. I mean, like you said, if other companies are going to do it in the solar industry, why not other companies that may do it in the renewable energy field or the alternative energy field? What are they going to be looking at in terms of what's in the tax code, what kind of tax credits they can, that consumers are getting, and say, how are we able to take advantage of this, and let's get some of that money from the taxpayers into our pockets?
Yeah, because honestly, at the end of the day, I thought in the article it said, and while it's hampered efforts to achieve real energy independence in the U.S. and caused real harm to the economy, it nevertheless has met a legitimate need for homeowners desperate for relief from high energy costs. The problem is, as they step out of the market, the rest of us that are left pick up an even higher chunk of that.
Yeah, that's
absolutely. Yeah, go ahead.
No, that's that was what I heard quite some time ago on this whole solar thing. Was as more and more people get on solar panels, obviously the power companies are going to sell less power, and as a result of that, they will pass that reduction of income on to the remaining consumers, and they'll have to make up that difference in increased rates. And so I thought, well, how is that really actually saving anybody anything?
Oh, correct. Absolutely. And even looking at the savings, when we talked about the fact that with the panels on the home and how they're leasing them, yes, but these are structures that are essentially going to be permanent. David brought up a great point in the article. And it's towards the end when you're looking at the idea of the fact that it's, you know, your home is you own it and it's an asset of yours, but now you're adding this potential liability to it, and that actually could devalue the property. And so, yeah, sure, so you may be saving for, you know, in the upfront months because you're leasing and you're getting these initial savings of, you know, maybe, I don't know, Dave said something like $50 a month he throws out when you look at some of the statistics, but then your home becomes devalued because of the structures on your on the property to the tune of almost $15,000. And when you look at how long it would take someone, when you look at how long it would take a homeowner to actually get that $15,000 back from the savings on the energy, it would take such a long time that it would be more than 5 years. You're looking at almost 10 years, really, when you're looking at how to get that value back. And you know, obviously, there are other things that happen to your home in 10 years. You know, you have to look at the market share. You have to look at what's going on in the property itself, what's going on in your neighborhood. So taking away all those costs into account, a solar panel on your home or several of them could devalue your home to the point where the energy savings that you may or may not be getting from it will take you almost 10 years to recuperate.
Gosh, think about
really,
the bad
really problematic.
And think about the bad policy in California that's being made in that 10-year period that's crushing you. I mean, we're just looking at one rotten thing after the next. You know, as much as they don't like to admit it, people are leaving. They're sick of it. So, you know, unless you're in the Bay Area where, you know, nothing bad ever happens and it's all rainbows and puppies day in and day out, you know, if you're out in the real world, this kind of thing could be a huge, huge deal breaker. So that little bit every month, I'm kind of curious, do you have any actual, do you have any examples, you know, like homeowner, you know, Joe Blow homeowner, he puts his panels on, he was paying $300 a month, now he's paying $150. Do you have a math example for us? I didn't really ask you that ahead of time, but
So what we're doing right now is we're working on a project. I can tell you that we are looking at Solar City and their statistics, how much is being spent, and we're reaching out to the communities out in California and homeowners who have been impacted by this. And we're looking to talk to people to see from those who are happy with what's going on or unhappy with what's going on. And we're really looking to get those testimonials. And it's a project we're working on. It's not complete yet. We're still in the phases of it. So that's more like a stay tuned, because the first aspect of what we're looking at right now is the initial idea of Solar City and the fact that they're gaming the system to get these tax credits, and consumers are essentially being ripped off. The second phase of it, like you guys are talking about before you had me on, right when you were introducing me, and what we've been talking about is, what is the impact now? Now we've seen that Solar City is getting those tax credits, but now we want to look at, okay, so the consumers are getting the shaft because the tax credits that they may have thought they were going to get, they're actually not getting because they're leasing the panels.
Yeah.
Now let's go to the results of what's going on with the solar panels. That's the next phase, and so it's more like a stay tuned when we're talking about it, to say we're going to hopefully have these testimonials and we're going to hear from some average consumers, and some may be happy and some may not be happy. But the question is, is it worth it for taxpayers in other states around the country to be essentially subsidizing this California company to the tune of billions of dollars of tax credits over the long period of time?
And that's a huge no. We'll just help them answer the question just in case they've had way too much Kool-Aid. The answer is no, don't do it. It's a bad idea. They'll blow up. We need to take a really quick break. We're going to come back. We have Michi Iliazzi on with us, Communications and Policy Manager for the Taxpayers Protection Alliance. And I hope you'll check out the full article. And we've also got some other ones attached. I like the summer reading, Internet Access Taxes, and there's another one on Taxpayer Tricks and Treats of 2013. That was on KTGO Radio, and actually that was a great interview too. So those are all posted, thanks to Robert Exter, on WeThePeopleRadio.us. Be back with you in 2 minutes here at KCNR 1460 AM.
I slipped on my solar panel and broke it.
We're playing all the hit songs for the companies that are scoring all this cash. This is probably like music in their elevators. This is stuff they hum all day long while they're spending our money. Hey, you're listening to We the People Radio. We're here with Michi Iliazzi, the Communications and Policy Manager for Taxpayers Protection Alliance, joining Aaron, Bill, Bob. We started early this morning, so our fun and frivolity is a little bit muted because we actually were in our chairs before the program started.
Michi, I have a question for the folks maybe just joining us. Let's say I own a home, and I get involved in one of these leases, and everything's great, and 2 years down the road, my company moves me to Nebraska, and I got to sell my house. Now I have this lease. I have to get out of the lease, and typically what that means is you have to buy the panels or whatever it is. You have to pay it off. At that point, I own them. They're going to stay on the house. The new owner is going to realize the benefit of the panels, I guess. How does that all work? I mean, if I have to sell that property and move on, kind of walk me through how that...
Yeah, you can't make somebody take over your lease, can you?
And I can't take them off the house, but, you know, what happens at that point?
It's a present.
Yeah, so what happens is when you are, you know, when you get home and you get the lease, essentially when you buy the panels, it may add value to your home because you're buying them. But unfortunately, because it's the lease, it's actually personal property and it's not part of the house.
Right. So if I move, I have to satisfy that lease and what?
Correct. And to do that, you have to find a buyer to do it. That's what we talk about. It scares off the buyers because what happens is when you're not going to take the structure out, so it's going to become a part of it. So what you have to do is you have to find a buyer who is going to be essentially willing to take on this lease. And you look at Solar City, 110,000 lease customers, and they've had the transfer of ownership of about 1,500 of them to date. And what happens is the new owners may enjoy that cost, or they may enjoy those savings, or they may not. We don't know. But the problem is you have to transfer the ownership. So, I mean, if you're getting out of the lease, buying it is a different story. And like we talked about before, it's going to change the whole calculation of, whether or not you even want to get into lease, because look at the problem you present now.
So that is your only option at that point is to, if you want to sell your house, which you have to, you have no choice, you have to sell that property. It comes with a lease on those. There is no other way to get out of that.
Yeah, the lease that you pay comes with the house, and they're not looking to sell them. That's the whole point. Solar City is not looking to sell these. They want to continue the leases, so they don't want to. They want to keep the tax credits, and they're not going to pay for installation costs if you're going to move, and then they're going to make these solar panels go somewhere else. So really, that's what's going on, and to get out of the lease, I'm not sure if there's a fine or not. I've not heard of that. So I think for what it is homeowners have to look for buyers who are interested in, keeping the lease and being able to transfer the ownership. Because the last thing Solar City wants to do is sell them. If they wanted to sell them, they would have done it already. They don't want to lose the tax credit. And the homeowner in general, I wouldn't think that they would want to buy them either, because they're moving to another home. And then what's going to happen with installation costs and things such as that?
Sure.
So really, you're looking at a challenge for homeowners to be able to, if they get into this long-term lease and something happens, like you say, where they get another job and they have to move, out of their home, how do they resolve this? And, I guarantee you, I'm not looking for homes in California. I'm not in the market. I don't know if you guys are, but it would be interesting to see to go on, look at if there are listings where they literally let the people looking at the listing know there's a solar panel lease that's attached to this. Prospective buyers must be prepared to sign on to this lease and have it transferred to them.
So it's not ever.
That's what's going on.
It's not ever a lease to own. You can lease them for 10 years, then you own them. This is, you lease them forever.
Yeah, this is a lease of, we want to lease them to you because we're going to say it's going to reduce your upfront costs.
Sure.
And
that will
add to the savings you're getting. But on the back end, it's, well, we don't want to lease them to you because we know that we can actually get the credits that are being given to the consumer by the taxpayer, we can get it instead.
What's this do?
A lot of double talk going on here.
And what's this do on the corporate side for, I'm sure you guys have run the numbers on that. What type of a profitability picture does this create on the flip side for them by running it this way?
If you look at, Solar City actually, one company in general, if you look at Solar California, it has all these reports and statistics. And if you look on the page and you go to their statistics for geographically in California, one of the numbers you can get is the incentives. in the millions. And this is where you see the money that's going in and what kind of how this cost is going to be in terms of the projects and, you know, who's getting that money and how it helps. And the incentive cost in L.A. Total for solar, it's $58 million, nearly $59 million. And that's looking at an updated report. And so you see that companies who are getting these tax credits and are able to lease these as opposed to sell them, they can obviously claim that tax credit. They can obviously claim it as a depreciable asset, possibly, or they can claim it in some way or another. Because not only are you claiming the tax credit for the solar panel, there are other things that you can use within the tax code because it's so complicated to benefit the corporation. So you're talking, you know, SolarCity is getting these tax credits from 110,000 leases, and they're getting this 30% credit from the taxpayers. You're talking millions of dollars over the long term, obviously. Millions of dollars that are going into their bottom line. And while there's nothing wrong with making a profit, I mean, TPA, and I'm sure you guys, we love the free market. We love the private sector. We want them to succeed. We want them to make money. What we don't want is for them to be making a profit off the backs of subsidies that they're getting from taxpayers in states that aren't even, at least in California, you could say that, oh, maybe there's some benefits to the program, but what is a taxpayer in, you know, Louisiana or a taxpayer in North Dakota benefiting at all from padding the bottom line of SolarCity with the government subsidy?
Sure.
I mean, nothing. And so when you say what kind of money is this making, think about SolarCity, 110,000 leases.
Jeez.
And then you think about the tax credit, 30% tax credit on these solar panels that they still own. You're talking, over the long term, millions of dollars. Because when you look at the expansion of the subsidies for solar, when it started in 2008, and then when President Obama came in and expanded that even more under the stimulus program, the stimulus program is nearly $1 trillion. So we're definitely talking millions of dollars over the long term here when we look at the kind of money that is going to be made off of 110,000 leases that SolarCity has put out.
Yeah, and I think that's where, people tend to get a little bit bogged down on this whole lease thing. I mean, you can lease anything from a copy machine to an automobile. There's nothing wrong with the lease per se. People, you can lease anything. But I think what we're talking about here is this lease is majorly funded by us. And that's
ongoing. And it's ongoing. It isn't a one-shot deal.
Yeah, taxpayers are footing a major part of the bill. Because, I mean, let's face it, there is an expense involved. Somebody has to pay for those panels to get them out into the market and start the lease process. And you know, I don't have a problem with that. I mean, it's done all the time. But a major portion of the money that is used to create that lease is government money, and that's the part that I think we're talking about here, and that's the ripoff.
Yeah, and I just want to be really clear again, and I brought it up at the beginning when you both brought me on, and I just want to reiterate the point for all of us, I mean, not just for TPA, but I know that you guys do feel this way, that it's not about, being against solar or being against alternative energy. That's not the point of the discussion. That's not the point of the work that TPA is doing. That's not the point of the scrutiny that's been on SolarCity. The real point is that we should taxpayers in perpetuity be funding and subsidizing a company that is essentially giving a product that, if allowed to compete in the free market without government subsidies,
that's it.
Probably not succeed.
That's
right. Really the question. And I want to bring up a point because I know that, you know, time is cutting close and you're going to have another guest on. And I would have loved to be on for the full show, but I couldn't today. Hopefully, Dave or I can come back and we can talk about it more as the project that we're doing keeps going. But one thing I did want to point out, and this is an interesting thing, is that you see that this is not about the taxpayer subsidy, but this is about the actual idea that, there is risk involved here. out in California, you do have some firefighters unions who are actually a little wary of going into homes with these solar panels. And the reason is because of the risk of collapse to the roof where the panels are if the home is underdressed on fire. So that, and that's not a rip on Solar City. That's not really, you know, that's not meant to be taking a shot at the company. But that is just another thing when we talk about the risk that homeowners have when getting involved in something that they may not be fully aware of the consequences, whether it's a lease that could end up actually devaluing the property of your home, whether it's a structure that is in place permanently on your home that could possibly hinder the structure of what's going to happen if something were to happen to your home. So these are things that, that are really important. And while, like you said, like I've said, we're not out to discourage solar, but we're asking the question, how long do taxpayers have to fund this for? How long do they have to continue to hold this industry and prop it up until they can go out on their own and be successful in the free market?
Exactly. And you kind of touched on something there I'd like to maybe address after our break. But as a private individual, if I wanted to get involved in a lease arrangement, if I don't have government subsidies, I can't compete. And that's a whole other thing. So maybe we can talk about that just a little bit.
Well, besides the fact that we live in Northern California, so we have like north of us, we've got hydroelectric dams that the environmentalists want to take out. Well, there's the best form of energy looking, you know, staring us right in the face. But nationwide, they want to take out, I don't know, 700 dams or some stupid thing, so that we can subsidize solar panels on everyone's roof. You know what? This kind of stuff makes me want to fly into a rage. But instead, we'll take a two-minute break and listen to something funny. That Bob, do you have something funny for us? Please tell me it's funny.
Oh, I think it's funny.
Oh, he thinks okay. It's funny. Okay. We'll be right back.
We'll be back.
This
is going to make me cry.
Sunshine.
Oh, you're right. It is funny.
Makes me happy.
Bob, you're a bad man.
Sunshine in my eyes can make me cry. Sunshine on the water looks so lovely. Almost always makes me high.
Subsidize that.
Subsidize that. I've gotten a haircut.
The John Denver song is extra special. Kudos, Bob.
Yeah, sunshine on the water did make him cry for a second.
On the way down.
Hey.
Oh, my gosh. What a couple of haters.
A little respect for the dead around here.
We have none.
A couple of haters.
Sunday morning. Sacrilege. Oh, my goodness. Michi Iliazzi is our guest. We are talking trash about the solar industry and how they're being subsidized here on these rooftop solar system leases. So if your neighbor tells you that he's getting this great deal from some company called, what's the name of it again?
Solar City.
Sun City. No. What is it? Solar City.
Solar City.
Solar City. And they're coming through the neighborhood, knocking on doors because it's usually how they do it, putting out flyers, blah, blah, blah. What a great way to do it. You can sign a lease with them and get this solar panel. It's going to be less money. Save. Yeah, you should read more. Send them to our website and promote the article here that is written by these guys at the Taxpayers Protection Alliance. And so Okay, we'd like your final thoughts, but I also wanted you to put in a quick blurb for the article, and that's probably why you have to come back, because it's a much bigger topic than just a blurb. But you wrote a great article on the internet access taxes, and I know people have been kind of biting their nails watching that going through Congress.
Yeah, definitely. Really quick, thanks again for having me on the show, and would love to come back again and talk about this issue and other issues that TP is working on. And great choice of music, by the way. So apropos, but so great, though, really, seriously. So, the last thing I'd say on this issue in particular, SolarCity, is, they've been getting these tax credits since 2008, and it's millions of dollars. And the company, over time period, has actually posted a net loss of hundreds of millions of dollars. So taxpayers are subsidizing them. They're still losing money.
Wow.
And then when you talk about, it's pretty stunning. But then when you talk about the leasing, what's interesting is that we talk about, without these subsidies, can they compete in the market? Well, in 2017, they're going to start losing these tax credits unless they're reauthorized. And if they do lose those tax credits, consumers who have these leases, those costs are obviously going to fall on them. We're going to see certainly there's going to be rising costs, because if they're not able to get these subsidies, how can they survive?
Yeah, they're going to have to raise they're going to have to raise the lease rate, won't they?
Well, they
absolutely. So we're hitting a critical mass point here where we have to look at the consumers and say, you've really got to be concerned, and then taxpayers have got to be concerned. Are they going to be bailing these guys out? Are we going to have another Solyndra situation where we're bailing out a company and then it goes belly up anyway because they can't survive in the market?
Yeah, what's the chances of that, though? I mean, really.
That hardly ever happens.
That hardly ever happens with this.
Yeah, we've never seen anything like that.
That was a fluke. A fluke.
Yeah, that was not even a smidgen. Not even a smidgen.
Not even a smidgen. That's true. I mean, the sun's always going to shine. Come on.
Always. Yeah, well, the other thing, the summer reading, we just put it up on protectingtaxpayers.org. And that's really, while Congress is away, we just would like to focus on some issues that are really important. And internet access taxes is something that TPA has been really working hard on for quite some time. And we're hitting a crunch point because November 1st of this year, the temporary ban on internet access taxes is going to expire. And we really want Congress to do something. The House has already acted, made that ban permanent. We'd like for the Senate to act, and that's what the article talks about. And what we also want is we want them to keep it separate from internet sales taxes, because there are some forces in Congress, bipartisan, unfortunately, that would like to add on sales tax for the internet, and they would like to merge those two to basically, do a tit-for-tat kind of thing. And what we want to say is that those are separate things. Consumers that are being taxed for accessing the internet and just going online, it's different from sales. That's another fight. That's another issue. And we want to keep them separate. So I hope everybody will go visit the website, though, and look at that. And like I said, on SolarCity, I mean, this is just the beginning. We're just starting this. And I or Dave or both of us, I mean, we'd love to come back on the show.
Well, keep us definitely posted. Yeah, keep up with us and keep us up to speed. And we'll check in with you. And we want to thank you very much for coming on.
It's been awesome.
It has.
What a great way to start. Now you can have lunch.
Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it, and I would absolutely love to do it again. And you guys have a great Sunday out there on the West Coast.
Thanks a million.
Thanks,
it's Michi Eliazzi from the Taxpayers Protection Alliance, and everything's on the website, wethepeopleradio.us. You're listening to KCNR, 1460 AM, Shasta Ready. No, honestly, Bill's only been drinking coffee today, for sure.
Bitty. I'm going to hit the, what are these called?
High notes?
The Zip Fizz. Oh, yeah.
The Zip Fizz. Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah.
Vitamin B blast coming on.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, so you're joining We the People Radio.
He gets very weird every time I play a song from the Hair soundtrack.
I know. He does. He's got a, I know, it's a psychological thing.
Yeah, but I'm thinking about shaving my head. I got a good looking head.
You're really almost there.
Yeah, I know it. It wouldn't take long.
That was so easy.
I know it.
Oh my gosh! So you're rejoining We the People Radio for hour two. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We've got a ton of information on there because we've got two guests today. We just completed on the rooftop solar companies cashing in on government handouts, and by government handouts we mean your hard-earned tax dollars. That you gave to the government, and they're given to these companies so they can lease solar panels and park them on people's roofs, and the people's homes devalue. There's all sorts of bad stuff going on with that.
That sounds like a bad deal. I don't know how anybody could get involved with that and not really...
Well, apparently a lot of people are doing it. What do you say, 100,000 people or something?
How the heck do you sell your house with a lease on it? Wow.
You don't think you're moving, and then all of a sudden, surprise! So, you might want to go on there and read about that. If you'd like to call us, the number is 530-605-4567. And next week, hey, I should give a sneak preview for next week. Next week we have Evan Sayet on the program. It's Sayet is his last name. And Evan, he was born in New York City, went to school in Rochester. He moved out to Hollywood and pursued a career as a stand-up comedian, television writer. He produced Bill Maher's programs. He was a hardcore liberal. And
he got over that, though.
Yeah, then he figured it out. Evan, I'm looking at his website. Evan recognized that he had been acting as a knee-jerk liberal, but was in reality a conservative at heart. So he does tons and tons of speaking. He's very much in demand as the master of ceremonies for conservative events, Republican events. He's written a best-selling book, The Kindergarten Eden, How the Modern Liberal Thinks, and given numerous... lectures on the subject, I'm sure. So next week will be informative and fun. So
we have another surprise next week, too.
Put a little plug in there. We do?
Oh, yeah. We're doing the morning drive on Friday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, next Friday.
Yeah, we're sitting in for Carl and Linda. We'll be here at 7 o'clock. If you think we're funny at 8.
Oh, boy.
Okay, we weren't that funny today. All right, I had a really bad headache. I'm sorry. No, we'll be on there on Friday. So, hey, if you have ideas for guests and stuff, because we haven't really planned that yet, you can...
you might just end up with us. That could really be a quick drive.
All our information is actually on the website, wethepeopleradio.us. You've got... do you have cell numbers? Yep, cell numbers, 515-7135 for me. You can do Aaron at wethepeopleradio.us or Bill at wethepeopleradio. So, at least we have easy names.
Are you selling airtime on the Carl and Linda show this Friday? The highest bidder gets to be on with Aaron and Bill?
Yeah,
that's it.
Fun topics, interesting things, stuff people would like to hear about, stuff like that. And it's a slightly different format, so we'll be talking a lot faster, doing more commercials. It's always so stressful. Every time I've ever sat in for them, it's like, by the time you get done,
it's a race.
Is it over now? Oh, my goodness. So,
yeah, we'll get to do weather and all kinds of fun stuff.
I know. Bill's all excited.
Yeah.
But you don't get to talk as much smack as you like to.
I know. It happens so quickly. I mean, by the time you gear up, it's over. So
yeah, Bad Bob's going to get the itch next Friday, isn't he?
He is.
Yeah.
To push the button.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
actually, Bad Bob's usually off on Fridays. You might get Savannah.
Oh.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Maybe we'll get you.
What are you doing Friday?
What are you doing Friday?
She'll be quivering in the corner by the end of the first hour.
She'll be like, oh, no, I got the knuckleheads.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Not them.
That's funny. Well, anyway, so we wanted to make sure people plug in next week, and I'll send out a blast on that because we planned ahead. We know who our guest is. Robert's working on the page. We're going to be able to send that out. So if you're typically on our email list, you'll be able to forward that out to folks.
Oh, yeah. We got people working on it.
We got people. Yeah, Robert. Yeah. Robert's been working his little fingers to the bone. Thanks, Robert. Web page is handy. All right. So do we have Fred on the phone?
We do.
Yeah, this is going like we planned it. Kind of scary, actually.
Frightening.
Super scary. So Fred Kelly Grant, the infamous Fred Kelly Grant, he is of the standandfightclub.com, which is a super fun name, and I can't believe that was available. How great is that?
I can't either.
God.
I can't either.
You know, actually the only one that would be better than that is the Sit Down and Slide Uphill Club, but the DNC already has that one.
I haven't been called infamous in 3 or 4 days.
Well, it's kind of funny. Like, Yeah, because I didn't really think about it, but that does roll right off your tongue. The infamous Fred Kelly Grant. And then every now and then, people who have only met you once or only heard of you peripherally will say, you know, that man with three names. The man with, you're also the man with three names. It's all hyphenated, but, you know. And you have been on with us a zillion times. One, two, three, four, five. Yeah, seven. Seven before. Yep. So all those shows are linked, actually. So for people who would like to catch up on what Fred's been up to over the, got a half a decade, almost.
Yeah. Fred doesn't sit still. He's moving all the time.
October of 2010, man, you were like one of our first shows back when we were total dopes and we didn't even goof around.
It's been great. All the times I've been on, you've got a great show.
We have a lot of fun.
One of the best I've seen around and heard around.
Oh, golly.
Gee willikers.
That's the truth.
Just doing the math, but I think seven appearances would make him give him the most appearances on.
He would be the most infamous appearancer we have.
Well, I have to tell you that one time, when I was working on the Hawaii Initiative, one of the leading anti-grazing people in the state, John Marvel, Chad Gibson, who's a range expert, and I were in a competition to see which one got blasted by Marvel the most times. And the year that we kept track, I beat him by one. And so Chad made his decision the next year that he was going to outdo me. And he did. He got 117 blasts in the press, and I only got 116.
Wow.
That's brutal. Gosh, that's funny.
There are people where I am really infamous.
Well, you know, we like infamous. You know, infamous is fun, and you know your project intersecting with all of us out here in it should be in the whole state of California, but it's usually Northern California where the fighters live. But is the California Air Resources Board the evil?
Evil
California Air Resources Board, commonly known as CARB. We did have another moderately infamous guest who used to call it the California Arbitrary Rules for Bankruptcy, which...
And there are other names, too, that I've heard called.
I know, and there's not...
Those are off-the-air names.
That's right. That's right.
That's on the special list. So,
that was our pal Warren Duffy.
Warren Duffy in his cow suit, which just, you know, that was a fun show, man. Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry I missed you both when I was there this week. I was there briefly.
Yeah, you were here like Tuesday or Wednesday or something, right?
Pardon? Wednesday. I think Wednesday. I tell you, the week has gone so fast since, but I think it was Wednesday I was there.
And so what'd you kids decide on the CARB thing? Where are we?
Well, we've decided that the first of the hearings on the exhaust filter will be October 29th, 30th, and 31st. I thought Halloween was very appropriate in Renton. And then we're working on a second one down in the Sacramento area or even further south so that we can try to get Southern California, those few Southern California people who still would like to make a living in the trucking business, could take advantage of the hearing process. But I know you folks have talked before about this exhaust filter. It's designed to take more particulates out of the air than even the EPA is prepared to say is necessary. Now, the EPA has really given over to CARB the opportunity to set the highest standard, a higher standard than the law requires for California, and then, move that rule eastward. Because once it's established and EPA accepts it, it'll become the rule in every state. Those filters are, they're very, very expensive, but we now have witnesses who say that not only are they expensive, but they're ineffective and perhaps even dangerous. The ineffective part is that when they're put on one of these older diesel vehicles, it breaks down immediately within 3 or 4 hours. We have a witness with Caltrans in their repair shop who says that job security is certain because every time one of those trucks goes out with the filter, it comes back the next day, and they have to work on it.
Great.
So it keeps them busy with
that. Are they keeping track of how many vehicles are actually catching on fire as a result of those filters?
Well, that's the thing, that the proof is circumstantial. There are people keeping track of it, but so far it is circumstantial evidence. Now, as an old prosecutor, it's good enough circumstantial evidence that I think I could prove a case on it, particularly the one in California a few months ago where the witnesses said that they saw the flames before the crash took place. I don't remember the specifics of the wreck. I'm sure you two do.
This was the bus thing,
that
right?
That was the bus, the FedEx truck. Yeah, yeah.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
It was a FedEx truck on Interstate 5.
And the flames were just about where this exhaust filter would be. But we do know scientifically that the filter does heat up, and it heats up to a tremendous temperature. And when a truck for example, I spent 3.5 hours sitting in Nevada just over the California line waiting for the clearance of the highway. Well, if one of these trucks with a filter on it like that had to do that, it gets to a heat that's just more than circumstantially dangerous. So they haven't done their homework. As a matter of fact, the particulate level that they settled on was made up out of the blue sky. There is no scientific basis for it, and the EPA directors finally admitted that.
Well, the science that the EPA based a lot of their stuff on, they proved to be fraudulent, and the EPA
absolutely
admitted to that. And yet, California is still basing their rules on that bad science. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly right. And the scientist, of course, for CARB, who holds a PhD, bought the PhD from a company in New York.
Yeah, Fisher Price.
I'm thinking of getting one in philosophy or something.
Yeah, I think the same thing.
I think it's $1,000. Was that what it was, Bob?
Yeah.
Like
yeah, it wasn't. And you know, the thing is, even after they found that out, he's still getting paid. He's still getting paid.
Right.
He's still at CARB, which is fantastic. I mean, shows excellent judgment on. You know, of course, I don't know if people expect excellent judgment out of California, but you know, anyway.
Yeah, well, the willingness of CARB to take this on for the EPA is what stuns me. I mean, that a state would take what has been acknowledged as fraudulent science and be the lead in making this happen. And the people that it really hurts are it hurts the consumer, because the big companies that have already gone ahead and converted, you know, that cost is going to get put on the buyer, on the receivers of shipments, and ultimately on the consumer. But in the economy, also hurt are the independent truckers, the smaller companies that just simply can't afford to put one of those filters on one of the older diesels that they operate with and can operate for 30 years on it. And they can't afford the breakdowns that occur once the filter's on there.
Right.
It just gets better and better and better. We're going to come back and talk some more trash about CARB and how you can pitch in and be part of fighting them, actually, which is the most important part. Here at We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, at KCNR 1460 AM. and thanks to CARB, it's getting better every day. Of course, we have volcanoes, forest fires. We've got like a million things that are thwarting their plans. But
yes, just the forest fires in the last couple of weeks kind of offset anything CARB's done in the last 20 years.
Or ever will
do. You know that we proved in Wisconsin during a hearing there on the EPA particulate rules that forest fires in Idaho 2 years ago produced more carbon dioxide into the air, or the particulates, the outlawed particulates,
sure,
into the air than all the man-made emissions in the state. And those forest fires were all caused by the Forest Service lack of management by letting the fuels build up.
Yeah, you think we had a good RICO case there with the...
Well, the Wisconsin local governments that held the hearing have called on EPA to regulate the Forest Service. And that's causing quite a stir.
Yeah, because, you know, anytime you want to rein those guys in, you just don't understand what it is they're doing to help you. And we have a caller on the line who has a great suggestion for all of that. You still in there?
Is it Matt?
Yes.
Hey, there you are.
All right. Hi. I just wanted to interject. I think that anybody that has any problem with any of these unelected, unaccountable bureaucracies in our area should be supporting the State of Jefferson movement. These people do not answer to us anymore. They don't go to prison. They just make rules in the name of the greater good, and there's no way to regain control without resetting the laws, and the State of Jefferson movement is the answer to that problem. And without that, you're just trying to plug a hole in a bucket that's got thousands of leaks, because none of these people answer to the general public anymore. They're not elected. They don't have anything to lose, and when they get caught violating the law or doing something that they shouldn't be, nothing actually happens anymore.
And that's an excellent point.
Well, you know, as I was coming back from, we drove to California, and coming back, I came through eastern Oregon, or through Oregon, through all of Oregon at 55 miles an hour. And it's clear that Northern California is a state completely separate in interest from Southern California. Eastern Oregon is completely separate and more related to Idaho than it is to Western Oregon and Portland. Same with Eastern Washington. It's the rural communities that are getting hurt, and it's deliberate. I've been able to prove, I think, sufficiently in my new book that hopefully is going to get published this year, War on Rural America, that every agency has set out to end the production from natural resources that have been traditional in our rural areas. You know, as I was coming through Oregon, they turned off irrigation water to the Klamath Basin farmers and ranchers just this past week. And when you see the reservoir, you see how high it is. They petitioned the Bureau of Reclamation to release more water. They can release more water so that those ranchers and farmers can get another crop, because right now they will lose everything. They would have to get the third crop to break even and the fourth crop to make a profit. They aren't even going to get the third one in.
Mm.
And that's just asinine, ridiculous.
Yep, and splitting off the northern part of California for people. Matt, tell me the State of Jefferson website, because I just can't think of it all of a sudden.
Oh, it's Jefferson State Declaration Committee.
There you go.
If you Google that, you can find the resources. I will say this on the movement of the Jefferson State. These people need to be more active in countering the propaganda pushed. I mean, I've heard everything from that the Jefferson State want to repeal due process to everything possible you can make up to try to poison the movement. And I don't want to make it a left-right kind of thing, but those who want the status quo are desperate to say anything they can to dupe the dumbed-down, low-information voters into supporting the status quo. The only people who are benefiting from what's going on now. It's not even the people in the cities. It's the bureaucratic That's establishment right. and the special interest groups that our legislators have sold themselves to. Because there's Absolutely. Nothing, nobody is prospering anymore. It's become collapse the economy in the name of the environment, in the name of the greater good. And the only people who are benefiting are the bureaucrats and the very small sections of special interest groups that are fighting tooth and nail. And I just want to put it out there that if you take the time to do a Google search on the State of Jefferson movement, you'll find that there are so many people, and it's relatively small, but in the scheme of articles, they'll say anything they possibly can to avoid having to deal with the real issue, and that's the government is the problem in our community.
Yep, and the site, I knew I had it in here, and Robert sent it to me, too.
One of the things is that common sense just doesn't exist in the regulatory scheme. It's not intended to. As I was reading the Burns newspaper yesterday morning, they are gillnetting and electrofishing the brook trout from the lakes in Harney County, Oregon, because they're aggressive and they're more prolific than the red band trout and the bull trout. And so they're using techniques to destroy a species because it's not native. The others are native. The brook trout's been there for 90 years, but it's not a native fish, so they're destroying it. They're doing what, if somebody from the public tried to do that, they'd be facing fines and prison sentence.
We'd all go to jail.
Well, it's whatever fits the agenda at the time. It's like these people swing from one direction to the other on almost a daily basis.
Well, we're crisis driven. For the folks that want to actually get the correct scoop on Jefferson, it's jeffersondeclaration.net. That's the part I was missing. So jeffersondeclaration.net, and from there, search State of Jefferson, but you'll get a whole long set of history, but I would definitely look at all the different media pieces. Thanks, Matt, for bringing that up. We're going to come back with Fred Kelly Grant in 2 minutes. Got to take a super speedy break here, otherwise we'll have them all at the end of the hour, you know?
So, thank you for having me on.
Absolutely.
Bye.
Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, and more fun music here at KCNR, 1460 AM.
Nothing but blue skies do I see. Blue birds singing a song. Nothing but blue skies from now on. I never saw the sun shining so bright. Never saw things going so right. Noticing the days hurrying by. When you're in love, find how they fly by the blue day.
Frank, do you feel the need to get in here and make some bird noises with the boys?
Nothing but blue sky from now on.
Is that the bluebird of happiness?
That's my meadow lark.
Oh, your meadow lark. Oh, I didn't know. This makes me feel all drifty and tired.
Apologies to meadow lark lemon.
Oh, Fred.
One of my favorite songs.
I know, you know, it's a way to ruin a good song, you know. We listen to it in the context of carb, but it's true. It is true.
Get a couple chuckleheads who make bird calls during the song.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'm gonna have my granddaughter while she's here. They came back with us from California to spend some time. I'm gonna have her try to download the Zippity Doodah on my phone.
Yes.
Because right now when the phone rings, I kind of resent it, but I think if there's a good song like that on it, I might not.
Zippity-doo-dah would be fun. You know, the other one that's extra fun is James Brown.
Is that why you work?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Because
you know what?
When you're in a public place, there's nothing like, wow, I feel good.
Yeah, yeah.
Cares
yeah,
the crap
I,
out of
James
people.
Brown's one of my favorites. He's a native South Carolinian like me. Fortunately, we didn't go the same routes.
good thinking.
Not even close.
So, okay, so talk to us about the Stand and Fight Club before we screw around and the hour's over.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, Aaron and Bob, I went through a period of time for about 2 months when I was ready to give this all up. Because the companies that are getting hit, the big companies that are getting hit by the EPA, and the big people that are getting hit by it, just are not willing to fight because they're afraid of the IRS. This administration, I heard a talk show last evening that said that this is the worst, that this is worse than the Nixon administration on the use of the IRS. I don't even think there's a comparison. The IRS is used, there's no way for people to give anonymously, and the money just wasn't coming in to hire the experts that we need to prove these cases. So I've talked with several people who've worked with me in the Stand and Fight Club, and we've decided that come the 1st of September, we're going to go to the grassroots using every email connection that I have to get the word out to the people that for $25, $50, $75, or $100 a year, if they contribute that, we'll use that money to fight the EPA and the Forest Service and these other regulatory agencies. And it's either going to prove or disprove my theory that I've had for several years that the people are the ones that have the will to fight. And if you make it so that they can afford it, that we'll do better than trying to get money from the big companies and the people with big dollars because they're just scared to death of the IRS. So that's where we're headed, the Stand and Fight Club. And what we do with the funds is, as in Wisconsin and Kansas, we hire the experts that are needed to prove our case in a hearing. We did that in Utah and Arizona to fight off the withdrawal of the uranium lands. And once again, the companies wouldn't contribute to it because they were scared to death. But we did it on the basis, and that was with American Stewards of Liberty when I was still with them. We were able to make a case with evidence, not just opinions, but with evidence, scientific evidence, that number one, there was no basis for withdrawing the uranium mining lands scientifically, and second, they didn't coordinate in the statutory process. And when the counties then went to court to sue to stop it, the federal judge ruled with them that the motion to dismiss was denied, and there will be a trial as to whether or not they coordinated. If they didn't, that whole withdrawal order will go down. And they didn't. They didn't.
Hmm.
So that's what the club is about. It's about our trying to make this happen with the little people, the ones that are getting hurt throughout the country, the working people.
Well, the big, a lot of the big companies, I mean, we see the same thing in the timber industry. That's kind of a similar example where
the
big timber companies contribute to the people who actually write regulation or write laws that screw them over in regulation, but they're afraid not to contribute to them for fear that it'll be worse than it is if they, I don't know.
Well, it's true. When we were fighting years ago for the ranchers in Idaho, we were fighting the ecosystem, what was it called, Ice Bump, that ecosystem of the interior Columbia. And I expected that Boise Cascade would be one of the people that would help us. But no, they were opposed. They were in favor of the ecosystem plan because it got rid of the independent operators. It got rid of the independent loggers and the sawmills. And they were bringing logs in from South America up the Pacific coast all the time that we were fighting to save the timber industry in Idaho.
Well, I think one of the more dangerous things that's happening now too is even with the big mostly with the bigger corporations is it's easier and less expensive to just roll over and settle than it is to ever take anything to trial.
Absolutely. And then the paper companies that are getting hurt because of the crackdown on boilers, they're going to China. Yeah. 6 of 9 companies in one major company have moved to China to make the paper that we buy.
Well, there just comes a point where we've settled so much that we have little left to fight for.
Well, the rule of law means nothing.
Right.
And right and wrong means that we're having a conversation in the chat room. Todd is contributing in the chat room and talking about how the research and the science isn't, it's all up for bid. He said Gore became a multimillionaire based on the global warming scam, and along the way the U.S. wasted an estimated $50 billion on alleged research whose sole purpose was to give credence to it. Too many scientists line their pockets with taxpayer dollars, and many government agencies increase theirs as well. So, I mean, I think we see that in lots of fronts. And we've got Billy Bob from Palo Cedro on the phone with, I don't know, question, comment, thoughts?
Billy Bob,
silence.
You there? Oh.
Hey.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, listen, I want to first thank you, Mr. Grant, for all your hard work and dedication for this Northern California area. I've been following the 7 programs that we, the people, have presented, and I want to just commend you on your energy and dedication for this area. My next question is only in the fact, are you involved at all in this dam removal on the Klamath, and is there any way that we can keep that mistake from not happening?
Well, I represented Siskiyou County at one point when the recommendation had gone to the Secretary of Interior to order the destruction of the dams, and I was working with their county attorney, and we were prepared to file a lawsuit to stop that on the grounds that they hadn't coordinated, they hadn't followed the statutory process.
Right.
I went to Washington with 2 of the supervisors. And the day before we were to see the secretary, his chief of staff told us that he had decided that he was not going to destroy the dams. He was going to wait until Congress authorized him to.
I appreciate all your effort on that. That would be a huge mistake if that ever happened. So I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Billy Bob.
That's one of the worst possible things. I've said on this program before, in the Rogue River where they destroyed those 2 dams, the heavy metals that came down from the silt in that river, Sheriff Gilbertson and a mining expert showed this to me 2 years ago there at Grants Pass, killed every living fish and organism in the river. And the position of destroying the dams is supposed to restore the salmon. Well, it'll be a long time because they can't live in the heavy metals that'll come down in the river.
It'll be the exact same.
That's a science fact that can't be answered, and so they ignore it.
Right, but that exact same thing's going to happen if they take the dams out on the Klamath.
Oh, sure.
And I think there's a whole bunch of folks lining up to file lawsuits if that ever even comes close to happening, and if it does happen, it'll just be a catastrophe.
Well, one of the things that makes us successful in the few times we go to court on the coordination process is that the agencies don't do it. They're required to do it. We won a case in Maryland. They're trying to stop crabbing and oyster harvest in the Chesapeake Bay, of all things. And they were stopping. They had stopped the fishing for the fish that is used as the bait for crab. And we won a case the first time that the Department of Environmental Quality in Maryland has ever been beaten in court. And 3 lawyers in Baltimore and I won that case. And we've got them kind of at a stalemate on the crab prohibitions because they didn't coordinate. They didn't follow the process. And one of the ways to beat them is to show that they don't follow the legal process. often if you go in, try to go in on the scientific merits, you don't win unless you can also show that they've just violated the law. They haven't worked with local governments the way they're supposed to.
Well, and also you run into a problem where local governments don't understand the coordination process. They think they do, and they run out and attempt to coordinate, don't do it right, and end up making a bigger mess than what they started with.
You're absolutely right. If the local governments across this country understood that process and used it the way it's very simply set forth in the statutes, we'd end all this mess. I mean, there's no question about it. But there's out of all of the local governments in rural America, I think that the last count that I know of, there are about 200 that use the process, and not all of them use it right, as you say. I don't mean right. I mean in the effective way. They don't use it in the effective way.
Correct. Because it is effective.
It will
give you the result you're looking for if you use it correctly, but they don't. And I think a lot of times they go in with their head down, wanting to just agree with everything and make friends. And that doesn't work.
They don't understand that there's a different outcome possible because they're really, let's face it, it looks like mostly we lose.
Yeah.
I think they get a little used to losing.
No, I agree. And the other thing is that they think it maybe is a silver bullet, and that if they do it one time, that's the end of it, and it isn't. The agencies are like Frankenstein's monster. They just keep coming.
Well, another thing I think they're just totally petrified of is if they don't play ball, they'll lose their federal funding in some fashion because they're all so dependent on the federal money that comes into these counties that they're afraid to make any waves.
Well, and that's true, and I've offered many times over the years to represent free any local government that gets its funds cut. That's illegal, and so far we've never had that happen in any of the areas where we've used this effectively.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah,
don't they always threaten that? Isn't that what they hold over?
Oh, sure they do. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely they do. Really, you mentioned RICO earlier. There's no clearer violation of RICO in the world than the way the agencies work with the public and with local governments. It truly is.
Well, you can see it, on the one agency makes a rule that the other agency uses, and look at California, perfect example, because you've got Governor Brown, who's going to take all this stuff and put in these the cap and trade and the carbon, all the carbon taxes for the fake carbon problem, and use it to fund high-cost rail, which is another complete and total scam. Will never be built in our lifetime, and will bilk us out of gazillions of dollars. Numbers we heretofore have not named. We'll hit new heights and or new lows.
Well, and those local governments that are opposed to that could stop that, just as we stopped the Trans-Texas Corridor in Texas. But you know what? We successfully stopped that, and they're starting it again through San Antonio.
Nice.
I just got a call. I got a call last week, and they're wanting help. Two little towns there are going to be destroyed by the new effort at a NAFTA superhighway link through Texas.
Gosh, because you know what? We need more stuff from Mexico. That's working out so well already.
Well, they're such a friendly country. They're looking out for our best interests all the time.
I thought it was all being couriered in. We need to take a really quick break. We'll be right back, finish off top of the hour with Fred Kelly Grant. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
We're talking about Mexico. I'll start talking about French.
We.
Running on.
train for 2 days.
Not empty at 7 o'clock. Oh, my gosh. We're back for another couple of minutes with Fred Kelly Grant.
Yeah, you know, before I forget about it, Aaron, I would like to say that we couldn't make this happen in Reading without the work of that coordination committee that Dick Wright is chairman of.
Yes.
They have really worked and worked hard to help get this thing to the point where I could agree that we could schedule a hearing.
And there's a lot of information. I was going to remind people before we get cut off here that information on this is on the webpage, wethepeopleradio.us. Scroll down. You'll see there's a really great video there with Fred talking to Scott Swendeman about the equipment out at Shasta College and how that plays in. Right below it is a big thing that says say no to CARB. It's got the letters that the coordination committee has written and a contact there for that. And another video, a 40-minute, I haven't seen this one. It's Reading versus CARB. It's got Fred on the front and links to the Stand and Fight Club and all sorts of good stuff. So if you want more information, that is the spot.
Thanks for bringing up that committee to Fred, because I think that's just another example of folks getting involved, not sitting on the sidelines complaining. And that's exactly what it's going to take. People are going to have to stand up and be heard and get out there and
partner with guys like you that actually know what you're doing.
Absolutely, and start a fight. You know, I mean, there's a lot of folks out there I think will join in and help, but you know, we got to start somewhere.
I do too, and the thing that your listeners have to understand is that every single citizen of Shasta County, Northern California, will be affected by this regulation. You know, sometimes people sit and say, "Well, that's too bad about the truckers." This is going to affect prices. It's going to affect services. It gets right down to the core.
Oh, it's going to affect everyone.
That goes on.
Absolutely. I mean, it's going to affect your. It's already affecting our grocery prices. It's fuel, everything. It's people think it doesn't affect them.
We're the first number one highest gas prices in the country, I think.
No,
what's that?
I think California is the number one on gas prices in the nation.
Well, I know that they were the highest that I've seen, and I've been in 11 states this year, and they were the highest. And I've been in the eastern states, so California must be the highest.
Yeah, when you come to California,
and will
you
be,
breathe,
and it'll go even higher. It'll go even higher.
Oh yeah, but when you breathe the air in California, can't you just feel the difference? I mean, it just feels so much cleaner, and I mean, it's all really worth it.
Yeah, it's especially when you're in Southern California, you know that everything that CARB is doing is really working.
It's really helping down there. God, I can't spend more than a day down there. My eyes feel like they're on fire.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, one of the people in Wisconsin with the loggers up in the North Woods actually testified that he had gone on and found that the EPA is trying to clean the air in northern Wisconsin, where it's the cleanest. That county has the cleanest air in the nation, according to EPA's own statistics.
Yeah, what a great place to start.
And he compared it to the air in D.C., where the EPA is, and it was quite interesting testimony.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. You know what? You can't make that stuff up sometimes, because it's just too stupid.
Fred, thanks for coming on today. We're out of time, but boy, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. It's a pleasure to have you on, and we're going to have you back.
Got to send out a big meow to the sheriff.
You two really do a wonderful job. I mean,
thank you very much.
Thanks, Fred, and we're looking forward to seeing you next time you come through town, and hopefully it'll be on a Monday, and we can have you speak and all that good stuff.
I hope so. I'm going to bring the people with me from New York and Maryland that are going to help me on the hearing.
Nice.
Outstanding.
If they're smart, we want them.
Oh, they are. They are.
Very cool. Thanks, Fred.
Thanks, Fred, very much.
Thank you much.
Well, kids, another episode of We the People Radio in the can.
Yeah.
Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Hope everybody out there has a great Sunday.
Got some fun stuff coming. Evan, say it next week.
Just say it.
Just say it.
So comedy and politics next week.
Say it.
Say it.
It's KCNR.
Shasta, Reading. Bill was supposed to finish.
That's right, but you're supposed to put a KCNR in front of it.
Yeah, he was doing that. Do it.
KCNR 1460 AM.
Shasta, Reading.
That's legal. That'll work. Thank you.
Okay.